Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Flute View Radio. This is Viviana Guzman for theflutview.com. Hello, everybody. Happy Monday. This is Viviana Guzman for the Flute View Podcast Radio. Today, our show is entitled Orchestra Positions for Men Only. This is a roundtable discussion, and I will be joined by my fellow Flute View partners. First, I will ask Fluter Scooter. You are live. Can you hear me? Welcome, Fluter.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how you doing? What's up?
I'm good. I am currently in Los Angeles. What am I doing these days? Working on my new website. I have yet another website. I'm moving it over to another platform to include more bags and the new clarinet bags and oboe bags. So, and the new Greg Pasillo bags. So I'm working on that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I saw you post the flute bags are now available in Chile, thanks to Hans Ehrlich.
Yes.
Flute boss of Chile.
Flute boss, and not just in Chile, also in South America. He's going to be distributing to some other places. So probably this week I'll know some more information about that. So. Yeah, I'm excited to have him on board. I have a new dealer in Hong Kong, too. So, you know, just keeping expanding the brand, and I'm excited about the clarinet and oboe bags, too, and launching those officially very soon.
Awesome. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like we have Barbara on board, so let me just pull her in. Barbara Cecil, you are now live. Hello and welcome.
Oh,
how are you?
Hello. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. That's good.
What's up in Barbara Cecil world?
Oh, it's been a very interesting time for us because we have transferred into our startup mode and we're turning ourselves into an ed tech company, which is called CurriculLive. And we have been in a fundraising mode. We just applied to what's called an accelerator, and we got to the interview phase, and now we're waiting to hear, which means that for 3 months we will be working with investors and mentors and all sorts of people to actually build the business, which is the curriculum part of our company, which is using music to teach math and science and English language arts and social studies through our stories, live performances, and on curriculum.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which will then be turned into embedded into tech so that the kids will start having it on their iPads, and it will become more universal than the kind of onesies that we do. You know, we go to a school, we perform, we do. So that's what we're doing, and it's really interesting and a big change and very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very technical.
Yeah, it's very technical, but it's really just an expansion of exactly what we were doing, except to get it to more people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well,
yeah.
Good luck with all
very
that.
Excited. Thank you.
Viviana, what are you? What are you
up
to these days?
What about you?
I
actually, you know, I've already been to 12 countries this year. And, you know, when things happen so quickly, I mean, my life is just so insane normally. And even after my whale video went viral and I was on CNN and BBC and, you know, all over the world I was doing. I got another interview for Tokyo, and I was, you know, it came up in Australia, and I was doing TV interviews in Chile. And it was just so insane that now I'm doing just catch up. And I'm recording a new CD, which is going to, of course, have a whale theme on it. So that's what I'm working on in
that's
a nutshell.
Great.
But I'm trying to actually just step back a little and just – it's important to play catch-up because I spin so out of control most of the time. Ooh, loud
yes.
siren. That must be from New York City, which is where
no,
Barbara
it's
is.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not from me.
That's me, actually. That's
Los
LA. That's where I live. It's actually worse than New York, I'm finding. Downtown LA is like, you know, people
wow.
think New York is bad. Come to downtown LA. It's kind of crazy. Sorry about
wow.
that.
I live in a quiet spot of New York City, so I don't have so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, let me, I'm going to, okay, that's better. Thank you. I'm going to do something that we've never done before. I have from one of our sponsors, the Woodwind and Brasswind, was the first place, the third place prize donor for the Flute View High School competition that we held earlier this year. And I would like to use my random sequence generator to choose
Ooh.
One of our Flute View subscribers to win a prize. And this is a very small, we're going to just start out small, but I think every time we do this podcast, we'll get bigger and bigger prizes going. And this is just a starter to see how this works. I have a box of pencils that were donated by Woodwind and Brasswind. And every musician needs a box of pencils, wouldn't you say?
Of course.
Yeah,
of course. And a pencil sharpener.
Let me see. Let me get this thing going. And I have inputted using all our subscribers. And let's see. This, where is it? Da-da-da-da-da-da. One, two, three. Here it is. The big winner of the box of pencils from Woodwind and Brasswind is Helen Ella. So Helen Ella, spelled E-L-L-A. I have your email, and I will be contacting you to coordinate the prize. So congratulations, Helen. Helen Ella.
All right. Congratulations.
Great.
So our topic today was it's named by Barbara Cecil, and I would first like to ask Fluter Scooter to comment and have her recent, because it just sort of spurred up a conversation between the three of us during one of our conference calls. The topic is orchestral positions for men only. And Fluter, I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts about this are and why we decided to choose this as our topic for today.
Yeah, based on recent experiences, well, basically, you know, I've been out of the orchestral world since, you know, forever. I started my business. I do different stuff. And, you know, I was kind of thinking I'd like to play in an orchestra again, just, you know, why not? I love the music, and I feel like it's kind of calling back to me. So, you know, the last audition I took was probably in 2002, while I was in school, I think, or maybe a little later than that, but it's been a while. So, you know, to have a resume reflect, like, okay, what have you been doing the past, like, 15 years that's not, like, orchestral playing? It's kind of hard to write that. And, you know, the resume had a lot of gaps in it, of course. But, you know, I would think that having 2 degrees from Juilliard would, and Carolyn Senses, my teacher, who's incredible, would kind of outweigh those that gap in the resume. And, you know, I always thought that, you know, going to Juilliard twice was a ticket in. Sorry about these sirens. So anyway, I decided recently, a few months ago, to take an audition. I'm not going to name the name of the orchestra, just due to, you know, confidentiality. But I'm going to read the letter that I got from them about this position. It was her principal flute position. This is not like a major, major orchestra either. So I'm just going to say, dear Andrea, I don't go by Scooter, Scooter, blank, blank, blank orchestra is very excited by the number of highly qualified candidates that have applied for the principal flute position. I regret to inform you that the audition committee, after carefully reviewing your resume, has decided that you do not currently have the level of professional experience required for this position. Everyone at blank, blank, blank orchestra appreciates the hard work and long hours, the expense in traveling, and the disappointment faced when not advanced in that audition. I hope, and this is where it got me, I hope that you will accept our recommendation and not participate in this audition. But if you feel that you are a truly promising candidate, please visit the link below and you can still audition. So, I haven't gotten any of these letters, any rejection letters or acceptance letters for a while, but this kind of was disturbing to me, and I guess this is a standard letter. I actually asked Carol Winsent at the NFA about this, and I was like, what is it? I can't believe this, and of course she couldn't believe it either, but she said that this is like a standard letter that they send out these days, basically telling you just, don't come. We don't want you. But if you think based against our recommendation and you can still audition, go for it, but we don't really want you to. So, I would have rather just had a simple, acceptance letter or rejection letter. We're sorry, we can't take you. But I would have been surprised with that.
But legally,
like I said,
they
it's not a big
that. Legally, they can't send you that.
Which one?
Yay or nay. They can't legally keep anybody out of the audition. So they send you this kind of recommendation letter.
Huh.
And then you think about many orchestras where somebody just shows up who wasn't recommended to audition and they win. You'd think they'd get over it, but.
Yeah, who are they really trying to weed out, though? It's everyone has a level. I would think, if you went to Juilliard, you have a level of playing that is good enough for that orchestra. And,
right.
I don't think that they, I don't know who's auditioning for this, and I guess they have a lot of people.
Well, maybe,
this is not a big orchestra at all.
Maybe they're looking for people who have been active in the orchestra world. I'm not condoning it. I think it's wrong. I think, when I was a student auditioning 100,000 years ago, anybody could audition.
Right.
Yeah. And then there was the big fight for screens, which leveled the playing field for women to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't feel like it's all that level these days. And, it's always been tricky. They can't keep anybody out. I think that they're trying to limit having 4 days of auditions.
Right. It's just one day of auditions. So, I don't really know.
I wouldn't ever see that as a rejection at all. I never take no for an answer. I always figure out a way to just go around whatever no there is, possible no there might be. There's always another way to get in. I don't know.
Well, I'm still going to take it. I'm still taking it. That's the thing. I still, I went to the link and I confirmed, and they're letting me audition, and it will be behind a screen, which I think is a good thing, just because – they could be biased that, that's the one that said she was going to audition anyway. So I think it'll be more of a level field. And I hope that, I can surprise them and hope they like my playing.
I'm sure you will. The thing that's been really making me think about orchestras these days, and I did a bunch of research before this call.
Mm-hmm.
And about female principal flutists, and in the Big Five, there's only one female principal flutist now, just Boston, with Elizabeth Rowe.
How about Baltimore, Emily?
That's not a big five. Stella. The big five. The big five. New York, Phil, Boston, Philly, Chicago, Cleveland.
Yeah.
Is Joshua Smith. It's all male flutists, and then the flutists at the Met, the really big jobs, L.A., San Francisco, those are all women. Atlanta is the only, I'd say, and Baltimore, as you mentioned, Houston.
Houston, Arrow, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Lorna McGee in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, right. So, you know, once you go down to those, but look at it generationally. Houston, Arrow Lee came into the orchestra in 1991. I don't know, and the same thing, Christina Smith has been there for a while. So I'm wondering about what's happening right now.
Well, in Europe, it's predominantly male. I mean, if we're just talking about the States, but then, you know, over in Europe, it's always been that way, but that's very predominantly male, and, you know, talking about soloists also. Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out why that's happening, given the preponderance of female flutists. Like the ratio. What's the ratio? Because think back at Juilliard.
Yeah.
To how many of us there were in each of our various classes, what the percentage was. And you knew how people played. So wasn't always level. So what is
right.
it? You know, is it seeing oneself in the position? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
In the National Flute Association convention that we all go to, predominantly in the U.S., all women. I brought my guitarist in one year, and he was like, oh, I want to come back to this convention.
It's so much fun.
There were so many women. So, yes, given that, it is a little surprising that the choice jobs are predominantly male. But I also did a lot of research on this before getting on, and I have a list of, you know, like I said, I would say it's 50-50. It's just that maybe the choice and the best paying jobs are given to the men, or the men end up getting them, both in America and in Europe. But I would say it was 50-50 U.S., that's just from the little research I did, and a little skewed more towards men taking major positions in orchestras in Europe. But there is, I would like to talk about the female, of course. Like in Europe, you have Emily Bynon in the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra. Catherine Bryan in the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. She went to school with you, Fluter, didn't she?
Yes. And I think we'll be doing a podcast with her also.
Yeah, she's coming up on a podcast. And Ulla Milman from the Danish National Radio Symphony Orchestra. And the principal flutist of the Iceland Symphony is also a woman. I'm not going to say her name. And in this country as well, I Arrow Lee DeRoe, the Houston Symphony, Elizabeth Rowe, Boston, Emily Scott. I know her as Emily Contrulis. I knew her back when I was in Aspen together from the Baltimore Symphony. Lorna McGee.
Oregon, Martha Long. Yeah.
And Rose Lombardo from the San Diego Symphony, Brooke Ferguson of the Colorado Symphony. And in Toronto, I think they have a vacancy, or they're in transition, but it has been Nora Schulman who's been principal there. So also Andra Bonnet from Mobile Symphony, Mercedes Smith of the Utah Symphony. I'm naming off all the females. So just to... From my point of view, I just thought maybe it is a bit 50-50, but with the noticing that it is generally the men that tend to get the better paying positions. But
that's But
is across
it wasn't
the
always
board.
Like that. I'd say like back a generation, you know, New York Phil had, you know, was a woman, and Metropolitan Opera
Jeannie
Orchestra
Baxter.
Also had a woman. You know, things have been, things are fluid. I mean, it's fluid. It's obviously different. The you know, our European conductors inviting European flutists to come in who happen to be male. You know, is it more even if it's behind the screen and that's not happening? And does it change when the other principal winds in the section are female, like Atlanta?
Mm-hmm. Well,
because that was another thing I looked at.
Another side note is, from this orchestra, there was also something in one of the documents they sent that they can choose like anyone they want and just put them in the final round. Like if they have a, you know, like another flutist they know that they think, I mean, I'm talking about the audition committee or the players in the orchestra can actually recommend, you know, some of their friends or whatever to just advance directly to the final. So they don't even have to go through the preliminary.
That's always been the case. I mean,
yeah,
I remember when Miss Julius Baker used to recommend so and so, and then they got the job. You know,
they
I mean, Julius Baker would actually place. Yeah, he placed a lot of people.
Yes, he did. He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been, I mean, when the unions came in and they did the screen, it was to combat the conductor or somebody just putting somebody in. And then it started to creep back because people started to feel like they should be able to have some choice, have some influence over who they're playing with. And so, at least from my, you know, readings over the years of all about this. And so now it's kind of like they have the audition, and then sometimes they do what they want to do. And
yeah, I'm all for a level playing field, and you know, just fairness in general. And I mean, right now there's so many. I mean, there's too many talented players right out of school, and you know, my generation and you guys' generation, and it's like, well, where are we going to put them all? And that's why I guess that's why they send these letters. But I feel like, you know, students who are getting these same, you know, emails from the orchestra, I would feel a little discouraged if this was something that I would choose to do, you know, go down this path. And, you know, just having people say, don't come, you know, but if you want to, you know, go for it, but you're not going to get it. This is all new to me, you know, this is like the reason why I strayed from it like 10, 15 years ago. And it's like kind of hitting me over the head that this is kind of why I didn't choose to go down that path. But, you know, I'm learning.
Yeah, I mean, maybe some of our listeners out in listener land have an idea or a thought about what's happening. Wow, that's so amazing.
Sorry.
Yes. I sometimes think it also has to do with how people see themselves. And so that's why I was hoping to hear from the millennial generation. You know, how do they see? Because you have to see yourself in the job, in a job often to get the job. It's a very, you have to see the possibility that you belong there.
Yeah, that is a great point.
And are young women not seeing the possibility, to your point, Fluter, also about how discouraging it might be? You know, are they not seeing it? And so they're not, that energy is what's coming through in the audition. Just something I think is in everything, you know, when we see ourselves, succeeding or doing the thing, we tend to do better. Somehow the energy of the universe conspires to make it work for us, and the way we go about it, the way we talk to people, just the way we are. Like if you're in the finals and you're sitting in the orchestra and you see yourself in that role, you know, that's...
Mm-hmm. I'm of this opinion that that is, I would say, 99% of what dictates our life, because that is super, super important.
Yeah.
For at least that's what I've found in my life.
So how do we support young players or female players around these very serious jobs to see themselves in the role? You know, what can we do? What happens in training or post-training to, you know, a lot of the flutists have come through, principal flutists have come through the New World Symphony.
Oh, yeah.
I think... You really coaches people into seeing themselves in the job.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You know, I can take a page from that playbook for everything else.
Fluter, didn't you play in the New World?
I subbed for them, yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
And I included that on my resume, even though it was in 2001.
But that's important. I mean,
these gaps in their resume too, you know, like a lot of people aren't, you know, actively taking auditions for 10 years. Like, who wants to do that? You know, people start their own businesses, you know, do other things, do this teaching circuit. And then, you know, if they want to get back into it, it seems a little more difficult than when you're fresh out of school.
The new principal player of the Chicago Orchestra, I was reading an interview while I was doing some research for this.
Stefan.
Yeah, and he was a flute mechanic for Flute Center of New York.
Really?
Before he got the Met job. Yeah, yeah.
That gives me hope.
Yeah, that's... And I'm saying that to give you hope, not to, again, I don't see no's. I look for the open window. I look for the back door. I would stress seeing yourself with this position. You are, you know, deserve it. I see you there. Barbara sees you there. You've got to do this. I mean, this would be awesome.
It would be pretty cool.
I think it would be awesome to have you there. And on that note, we only have 2 more minutes. So is there anything, closing thoughts that, Barbara, you would like to add?
No, I think this is an interesting topic, and the topic of women artists in general is an interesting topic that it would be great to explore and bring the community in on.
And women composers, too. Actually, I think we'll be featuring, I guess there's this catalog now in Italy that they put out of 13,000 titles of music, all by female composers, and they're releasing it in October, so I've been in contact with them, and we're going to have a little interview or feature article on that, too.
Great.
Just spreading the word
about
female artists.
Future podcasts are going to have more artist interviews and more roundtable discussions. And we encourage our viewers and subscribers to call in. And if we see your number coming up on the screen, we will call on you and ask you to join into the conversation and add your opinions. So this has been the Flute View Radio Podcast with Fluter Scooter, Barbara Cecil, and Viviana Guzman. Until next time, our next podcast will be hopefully in 2 weeks. We'll see you there. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.